And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
And silence. Silence. That happens
well,
all the time.
Well, you didn't say it, and now you're throwing it over to me.
I'm always throwing it over to you in the very first. And yep. One day, she will say something, and we will all be surprised. If you're just tuning in, this is week three. Are we on week three?
We're on week three, yes.
We're on week three, and we're, 10% through the information on fertility and infertility. So I highly encourage you, if you've missed the first two shows, go back and check those out on either SoundCloud or podcast. Catch yourself up to speed on where we're at, because – this is like a wellness 101 in general. We call it this because it's kind of educational in nature, and we don't necessarily go back and go through everything and recap the previous show. It's more like a college lecture. We just pick up where we were and go from
that
there.
That makes it sound really exciting.
Yeah, I know, right?
So amazing people listen to us.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing the followers that we have.
Yeah, a college lecture that you chose to listen to.
Especially after my singing last week. I'm still living that down. Oh. So anyway, well, that'll teach Aaron to forget a word. She's mad at me now, ladies and gentlemen. It's okay. As we finished up last week, we were talking about women trying to find out information and going to good old Dr. Google to get information to help them increase their chances of becoming pregnant, either using fertility treatments or just trying to get pregnant naturally. And we were talking about melatonin, and I talked about how that's really only beneficial in the process of going through IVF and how it can actually disrupt ovulation otherwise. Another supplement, just before we get into some of the more meat and potatoes of this show, is DHEA. DHEA is one of the things that a lot of IVF clinics realize, and kind of standard advice is to tell women to supplement with DHEA. The problem is, and they do this if you have diminished ovarian reserve and you're trying to get ready for IVF. And, whether or not you are actually advised to take it is kind of dependent on the clinic, but more clinics are more likely to recommend this supplement than most anything else. But they leave the decision of whether to take it or not up to you, and they don't really give you any detailed information in general about the strength of it, what product you need to get, where you should go to get it. They just don't really give a lot of information like, well, DHEA can help, and if you want to take that, it might be beneficial, and that's about all you get. And that's just – I'm sorry. That's not good enough. We deserve better than that. And that doesn't allow you the opportunity to make an actual informed decision. That is taking a wild guess. And so you're just kind of left. And so seeing that there is this huge gap – it's a chasm. It's an enormous gap between research and conventional fertility advice. We just kind of decided we're going to take it upon ourselves to distill this information down, and make it comprehensible. Give it some stuff that you can actually take away and go, okay, these are things that I can actually do. This is stuff that I can actually do. And again, it's in generals. There are some of the stuff that we're going to provide is general information. So you're going to have to tailor it to yourself a little bit, and not everything is going to work exactly right for every person.
Right. Because or come in and see us and we'll tailor it for you.
Exactly. And we'll tailor it for you. It's really not that super difficult as long as we know what we're dealing with. It's when we don't know what we're dealing with that makes it hard. When we get emails of people saying, well, I'm 36 years old, and I'm trying to get pregnant. What supplement should I take? Well, I don't know. That's hard. But if you're a patient, and we know what's going on. We know what your chemistry says, and we know your history, and we know what's going on, and we know all about everything that's going on. It's much easier for me to make a recommendation.
Well, and I think also one of the we're going to give some general guidelines here, but if you haven't been tested for a lot of the things, I mean, if we don't know if you have food sensitivities, if there's an indication you could have a parasite or you could have, you know, heavy metal toxicity, supplements aren't going to do you any good.
Right.
And I mean, so we, it just, I think there's a level of integrity that, you know, we try to run our clinic with where we're not going to recommend things that we don't actually know are going to do you any good. You know, I mean, there are certainly things that will benefit everyone and we're going to kind of go over that or that have generally been shown to be beneficial. We're going to go over all of that. But if you have these underlying issues, just know that it's not going to be impacting you nearly as much as it would a healthy person.
Right. Exactly. And so, you know, the whole process has been very interesting for us, you know, watching this little one grow and, you know, hearing heartbeats and stuff like that. I mean, I remember somewhere along the line I got asked, you know, well, what's it like? Or I don't remember the exact question, but my answer, it was, what's it like helping Aaron get pregnant? And I said, well, it's humbling. And the person that asked the question was kind of thrown off by my answer. And when I really got to thinking about it, it's really true. It's humbling because once you figure out the failure rates of healthy people for becoming pregnant, and then you factor in, you know, multiple autoimmune diseases. I mean, the deck couldn't have been more stacked against us in this whole situation. And so we came out a victor in this so far.
Right.
Here we are, what, 32, 33 weeks in and still rocking, still going.
Right. But it took a long time. And I think that's what, you know, I mean, most people aren't going to have all of the issues that I have. But I did know going into this that I need to figure out what the issues are and I need to fix them. And I think that's what the difference is. And that's why we were able to be successful. I mean, so while a lot of people listening, you know, I don't want it to be scary, the fact that like this actually took years. But I say took years because, you know, we had to find out like, okay, we're dealing with autoimmune conditions. We're dealing with heavy metal toxicity. We were dealing, and that's after I had already cleared like the food sensitivities and the parasites. And we, had started to get a handle on the thyroid. I mean, like, it's been a really long process, but I think that's where we're coming from with this is that if we can fix it with all of my issues, like there is hope.
Yeah, there's hope.
And I think that's what is frustrating to so many people is that when it doesn't work and you have no reason, because so many women have what they call unexplained infertility, where no one has any reason why you're not getting pregnant. I'm telling you, there is a reason.
Right.
And we can generally figure out what it is and correct it.
Right. Now, you know, again, as with anything, there aren't any guarantees, but there's a lot to be said for planning, right? You know, I use houses and cars and finances as examples. And a financial example would be, okay, so you want to retire a millionaire. Well, you know, there are no guarantees that if we put your money in the right places and you invest wisely and do all the right things that you are going to retire a millionaire. But the one thing I can guarantee is if you don't plan, you will be way farther away from it than if you do actually put a plan together.
Most people are not accidental millionaires.
Right. There aren't accidental millionaires. That's exactly right. They worked hard to get to that point. So they sacrificed and dedicated themselves to it. And this is there's sacrifice and dedication. If you have issues that you're going to have to do, there's just things that have to be done that can really improve your chances.
Right. But I don't, you know, if you do want to have a child, there's really no greater motivator. I mean, I've had people ask me like, how were you able to do all of that? And I'm like, well, I knew what I wanted. I mean, it's that simple. I'm not just talking about all of the physical things that, you know, had to be changed, but also financially, because it's a huge financial burden to go through IVF.
Massive.
And it, you know, and plus not knowing if we were going to have to turn to surrogacy. I mean, like planning for all of that, you know, there were a lot of things that we wanted that we missed out on. But, you know, it's all about knowing what your main goal is.
Right.
And I think that really, you know, that's what brings a lot of people into our clinic is they're like, okay, you know, this is what we want to do. We're ready to actually, you know, let's do the testing and let's figure it out because we want to get there.
Right. Right. Exactly. So if you are just starting out, if you're just starting out on your journey to try to get pregnant and you have no reason to expect that you're going to have any infertility problems, you may not necessarily need to adopt every single strategy that we lay out to help. You may not. And that's okay. But there are simple things that can be done that may help you become pregnant faster, may reduce the risk of you having a miscarriage. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, young, healthy women, even young, healthy women, rather, can have a disproportionate amount of abnormal eggs. So anything you can do to increase the or decrease the number of abnormal eggs and increase the health of your eggs is a step in the right direction. And so I recommend to everyone, you know, young and just starting out or not, getting some nutrients in your system to, you know, pre-plan for this. Start thinking about it early. You know, for the most part, women are becoming pregnant later in life. Pregnancy, you know, where women used to be pregnant, you know, in their early 20s, that's now being pushed into the late 20s and even into the 30s because they're having a career first, and that's
right.
Great.
We're also seeing infertility though earlier and earlier.
Exactly, but it's exactly where I was going with that. We're seeing infertility earlier and earlier. We're seeing a rise in chronic disease. We're seeing a rise in autoimmune condition, and a lot of this stuff has to go with nutrient status. So when we come back, we're going to dive into what things you can do if you're having difficulty conceiving, and we'll lay out some strategies that may help. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking about fertility and infertility today, and if you are just tuning in, this is part three. I think this is part three.
Yep.
of our series. We've been talking about this for a while now, so it kind of runs together in my brain. But this is part three. Make sure you go back and catch part one and part two, so you can get caught up on, because this is kind of a long story that we're telling here. But before the last break, we were talking about for ladies that are just thinking about having a baby and they're just starting on their journey to have a little one, if there's no reason to expect fertility problems, then you may not have to implement all of these things. But we also know that there are a disproportionately abnormal number of dysfunctional eggs. I think I said that all wrong. I'm not really sure. You can have a lot of bad eggs, even if you're young and healthy. And a lot of things can be done can improve the health of your eggs. And we talked about that in one of the previous shows, where we got into the fact that these eggs, they actually 3 to 4 months before you can really alter the health of the eggs that are being released and decrease your chances of you know, having any miscarriages or abnormal embryos or anything like that. And that, you know, these are some of the strategies that you can employ. But if you're having difficulty conceiving, so if you've been trying to conceive for more than 12 months or more than 6 months and you're over the age of 35, so that's that's kind of the cutoff ages, it's a good idea to see a fertility specialist and find out whether there's a specific cause, medical cause of your infertility that can be looked at. And for a lot of people, you know, consulting a fertility specialist may uncover some physical barriers to getting pregnant. They may find out that you have a lot of scar tissue going on, or your fallopian tube is blocked, or you have just wicked hormonal problems that affect the body's ability to ovulate or implantation of an embryo. There are a lot of things that can be, you know, factors there. But, you know, then they may figure out, you know, a very specific treatment may be available, or they can say, all right, your doctor might be able to say, okay, IVF may be able to be a workaround for what is this underlying cause for your infertility. regardless of the reason, one of the biggest steps to take is to improve egg quality. We talked about it before. Improving egg quality just increases your likelihood of success. And we want you to be the most – we want to put the best specimen out there. You know, you don't practice you don't become a musician overnight. You know, you don't just say, okay, well, I'm going to play the guitar and you never practice and never do anything and then go out and try to perform a concert, right? You practice, you put the time in, you put the work in, you become better at it. The same holds true for health and wellness. I mean, and egg quality, you can put all these nutrients in to give a better shot at having a healthy egg.
Right, exactly.
For lack of a better term.
Well, I think that a lot of people look at IVF like it is the, you know, like that's the last resort. And if I have to, I'll get pregnant through IVF. And
right.
I think we mentioned that earlier, that it's right. not that simple. Just because, you know, even if, you know, insurance is covering IVF or whether you're paying for it out of pocket, I mean, just because you go through IVF does not mean that you are going to get pregnant.
Right.
It fails all the time. I mean, that's not a guarantee. It's a huge help. And it does cut out a lot of the things that are factors that, you know, cause infertility. But it's not, a complete fix.
Right. So one of the big things out there, if you fall into a category or you have a physical or hormonal fertility issue, You got to follow the fertility specialist's advice relatively closely. They're very well trained at navigating those waters. But one of the things that modifies this a little bit is if you've been diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS. So PCOS is the most common ovulation fertility infertility condition out there. And one of the side effects that PCOS has is it reduces egg quality in a very specific way. And PCOS is this vicious circle that involves, you know, your hormones getting out of balance, and there's insulin is involved, which insulin, for those of you who don't know, insulin helps carry sugar into the cells for fuel, and insulin, this whole thing just kind of starts feeding itself.
Right.
And insulin
diet is very important with
yeah,
this, right?
Yeah, diet is extremely important, but insulin in particular. And so you really got to adopt and adapt to the advice that's given to you. And even when you do everything that your fertility doc's recommending, you still may have a little bit of difficulty, because unless you get all of this under control, this is going to have an impact on egg quality, because one of the big things with egg quality is insulin and knowing what's going on with your insulin levels. That's just hands down one of the things that's out there.
Right. But a lot of fertility doctors with PCOS they have got their standard protocol of what they do, and they may mention dietary changes knowing that that will make a difference, but they don't. I mean, one of the things that we've learned is, I mean, we, you know, take those with PCOS and help them step by step, you know, hold their hand through this, because the dietary changes are an absolute must,
right,
if you're going to fix this. And it can be, well, you can get around PCOS, but simply turning to IVF is not going to do that.
Right. So there are things that you can take out there that really help with this, because, you know, you can rebalance hormones and blood sugar. There's a product out there, it's called MYO inositol. There are different types of inositol. Not all inositol is the same. There are different forms. MYO inositol is very specific for this. But if you're suffering with PCOS, this is something that you've got to do. Now, I can't tell you what dose to take, because I don't know your particular situation. I don't know what you have going on, age, size, you know, all of this stuff matters. And, you know, the dose may be different than what's just recommended, you know, or what one pill has in it on the bottle. You may need more than that. You may need, you know, once in a great while of that. I just don't know. There's no way to possibly know without figuring out your specific case. But that's something that is extremely important, and I guarantee you, other than right here, you probably will never hear it. They just won't recommend that that's something that can help with PCOS.
Right.
So a lot of people get this catch-all diagnosis.
Right. I had brought this up before, and I think that's the most common is that if you, I mean, with PCOS, while it's difficult, at least there's, it's, of course, not a good diagnosis, but at least there is something to be said for having an answer of why things aren't working. And the vast majority of people who are dealing with infertility have the catch-all phrase of unexplained infertility.
Or age-related. Well, you're just old.
Never feel older than you do if you're over 35 and trying to get pregnant. Because it is like constantly every time, and you have a million appointments, and every single appointment you're reminded that like, oh, you're a special case because you're super old.
Yeah, it's like they have a megaphone announcing to the world, over 35, she's over 35. Ladies and gentlemen, she's over 35. Well, Doc, I had a question. Oh, the answer is you're over 35. And it's kind of funny. I'm pretty sure they have face recognition. You walk in the door and the door dings a little bit and says, caution, everyone, over 35 entering, over 35 entering.
Geriatric pregnancy.
geriatric pregnancy. That's kind of right. We laugh, but it's no laughing matter. Yeah, it's a tough one. But, in all honesty, if you're dealing with being punched right in the gut with, age-related infertility or unexplained infertility, you probably have the most work to do to help that. But you also probably have the most to gain by doing the work.
Right. Yeah, it's just you're going to have to, and that's really where we've seen some great strides. I mean, of course, it's great when we can make a few changes and, someone's able to get pregnant and that's,
simple.
And it's really simple. And, before we even knew all of this, before, we got into it ourselves, I know, TJ has talked about the fact that so many people ended up getting pregnant once you get a little bit of nutrition in them. It's just like so many people are so nutrient deficient. That, all of a sudden, they were looking at IVF and all of a sudden they're pregnant because they actually, they got a few IVs of IV nutrition and they're totally fine.
We have one patient, bless her heart, we were talking about it. She's like, well, I want to, my husband and I are trying to have another child. And I'm like, okay, well, you've got these health things going on. Let's figure out the testing. Let's figure out what we're going to do and let's game plan. Just hold off for a little bit. She's like, okay. So we did just a little bit of work, a few months worth, not much, 4 or 5 maybe. I don't remember off the top of my head. But just a short period of time. And I was like, okay, well, now we need to look here because we're kind of running into a little bit of a wall. And so we did some extra testing. And when she came back in to sit down, I was going through all of this and telling her, okay, this is what we can do. And this is how we're going to do it. And this is what we're going to do. And she goes, oh, by the way, I'm pregnant. Okay. Congratulations. I'm super excited. But then all that did was really say, okay, well, we have to put everything that we were going to do on hold because now you're pregnant. And I mean, it's not like they were preventing. They weren't trying to stop it, but they also weren't overly trying to, trying to get pregnant. And this is one of those things where it just happened. So God bless them. It happened. That's great. I'm so excited for them. And, we high-fived and hugged, and I was very happy and excited. But, some of her health issues that are there, we just have to deal with them after the fact. And, that's kind of a good problem to have sometimes, too.
Right, exactly. It's great when it works out and I know we've had a lot of these cases where, we're just partway through the treatment, and we just are getting started, and just those few, first few steps is all it takes. And then they come in and they're like, we've got to put this on hold because now I'm pregnant.
Right. And really putting it on hold is not really true because then we just shift what we're doing a little bit because you still need lots of nutrients while you're pregnant.
Right. No, exactly.
And there's a lot of stuff that can be done. We've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to continue on talking about infertility. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, you've missed a wonderful show on fertility and infertility. Well, if you're just tuning in, you've missed two shows the last couple of weeks, and we're in week three of, oh, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 of these episodes. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. The whole first quarter of 2018, infertility. No, I'm just teasing. We were talking before we left. We were talking about PCOS. We were talking about if you're diagnosed with PCOS, some things that you can do. We were also talking about the dreaded infertility diagnosis of unexplained infertility or age-related infertility. And we were talking about how you've got the most amount of work to do to improve your chances, but you also have the most to gain by doing the work. And so we were just kind of going through that and talking about that in general. And so, that there are a lot of techniques that you go through when you go to a fertility specialist. They start you on this progression. They may start you on medications. They may start you with intrauterine insemination, IUI, and then ultimately the top of the food chain for this is in vitro fertilization or IVF. And a lot of times these things succeed, and they succeed because they circumvent the problem rather than address the real issue. And so what happens is a lot of times there are a lot of failed attempts along the way because the real root issue that was present wasn't fixed.
Right. That's why so many people, will end up, having a number of failed IVF attempts or suffering miscarriages.
Right. And so what you end up with is this, women in their mid-30s, they want to blame infertility just on this constant, it's declining egg quality, declining egg quality, declining egg quality. And that becomes kind of like its own self-limiting prophecy. And even with IVF, it's, the success rates go down because of, this dreaded, your egg quality is there. But And we know that IVF success is dependent on age. But my question really for this is this really true? Is it only true in people who aren't really actively going after and improving, doing the things and implementing the steps necessary to improve egg quality? In those people, what's the success rate?
Well, and I think that really goes back to what we've talked about so much on the show, which is so many things are blamed on age. I mean, in so many of our different topics that we've discussed, we've said, people come in and they're like, well, I've got these issues, but they're, it's because I'm getting older.
Right.
Granted, a lot of times we're talking about people in like their 50s or 60s, but it's the same thinking here
right. That
we're looking at. I mean, so as you get older, yeah, you may have, a harder time, you may not have as many chromosomally normal eggs, but at the same time, there are things that you can do to increase that. I mean, we all know people who were able to get pregnant naturally in their 40s, probably, right? I mean,
right.
I certainly do. And so we know that it's possible. And we also know from our clinical experience, we know that it's totally possible to take people who have had failed IVF attempts and for them to end up getting pregnant naturally because the underlying factors that were causing a problem are fixed.
Right. Or you have someone who has to go through IVF for the first one and then they have babies 2, 3, and 4 just bam, bam, bam without anything,
right.
Without any help. And so, there's something to be said about, really paying attention to and addressing a lot of this nutritional status. So, shifting gears just a little bit, if you're one of the individuals out there that deal with recurrent miscarriages and you've had a bunch of these, improving egg quality is a huge piece of the puzzle for preventing certain types of miscarriages.
Well, and I would say even if you've just had one miscarriage,
that's true.
It's suffering one is devastating. Let's try to prevent it keep that down as much as we can because it's not something I would wish on anybody.
Right. But if you've had one or more than one, likely your doctor is going to recommend a full screening. But if they don't, you can kind of insist on it. just say, hey, you know what? Let's figure out what in the world this is.
Well, and what we're really advocating is, hey, why not do that screening before you ever go through this? Because there were a lot of things that we brought up to our doctor, and she's like, we don't test for that until there have been, you know, there's been multiple miscarriages. And I'm thinking, or multiple miscarriages or multiple failed attempts.
Failed attempts. So basically, multiple failed attempts means that's code word for lots of money spent already to spend just a little bit of money on testing that could have been done at the very beginning and found out the information to circumvent the whole trauma that comes with miscarriage.
Right. And I mean, I can kind of get it with, you know, when these people have, you know, insurance covering IVF, them saying, I'm just going to try it once and see how it happens and not do the testing. But for those of you who are paying out of pocket, the money paying for the testing is so tiny compared to what it costs for IVF that it doesn't make any sense. And I mean, and let's not forget the physical toll, you know, the amount of time, the emotional toll that all of that would take on you to go through multiple IVF cycles and have them fail, or even worse, in my opinion, have to suffer a miscarriage.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But they won't even look at, they won't even consider any of that testing until you've gone through that. I mean, even with us saying, you know, that we had the autoimmune conditions that we were dealing with, she's like, oh, well, normally we wouldn't know this until you've had multiple. I mean, they would never have even tested for that.
Right.
I already knew.
Exactly. And it's a simple thing to look into. I mean, if you're battling autoimmune condition, you're handicapped. You're starting with one arm tied behind your back there. That's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Right.
And I wish it were different, but it's not. That's just how the process is right now.
But as I can attest to, it can be gotten around. Doesn't mean you can't have a child.
Right. So, you know, one of the reasons that women have lost multiple pregnancies, multiple miscarriages, they can have blood clotting disorders, they can have immune disorders, things that may or may not easily be fixed with medication or supplementation or dietary changes or lifestyle things. There's some things that can be there. Another big one is just a dysfunctional thyroid. A dysfunctional thyroid is a huge piece of the puzzle. And unless you know, okay, I actually have autoimmune thyroid, that's not good enough. You have to, if you're trying to get pregnant, you have to know, do I have autoimmune thyroid or not? You've got to run all the antibodies. Do I have another autoimmune condition? You've got to run the test to figure out what is actually going on. Because if you've got testing that shows that you don't have a clotting issue, or you don't have immune dysfunction, and you don't have a thyroid issue, we're looking at a big culprit likely being egg quality.
Right.
And so egg quality is key in helping not have chromosomal abnormalities. The poorer the quality of egg, the more likely you will have chromosomal abnormalities.
And I want to be clear, because I don't think that I knew this before I went through all of the treatments, that chromosomal abnormalities could mean that, you know, something like Down syndrome or there's, you know, a problem. But most likely, because there are so many different chromosomal abnormalities, most of the ones that we, you know, that there's been sufficient research on are ones that will result in a miscarriage, could be an early miscarriage, could be a late miscarriage, or could result in a stillbirth.
Right.
I mean, so how horrible is that? So, right. I mean, I don't want this to come across like, oh, well, we're just trying to prevent Down syndrome. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, people are thrilled to have those babies. That's not what I'm talking about.
No.
I'm talking about the, you know, the heartbreak of losing a child, whether it's early in the pregnancy or late in the pregnancy, is devastating. And if we can prevent that, it's better to know ahead of time.
Right. That's exactly right. Because some of these, and what's interesting, when they did the, on our first round, when they told us that all of the embryos were chromosomally abnormal, they actually told us where the chromosomal abnormalities were.
And they were different ones for...
Every one of them were, I think... Two of them may have been the same, but all the rest of them were completely and vastly different. And they're like, well, I was like, well, so what does that mean? Our doctor, she was very nice. She was like, well, this one we know results in, you know, a miscarriage by week 8. No one survives past week 8. We know this to be true. This one over here does this. But we had one that was, you know, you may be able to carry this full term, but it's non-life sustainable.
Yeah, the baby will not survive.
The baby will not survive. Minutes to maybe hours after birth, and the baby will not survive. And so, you know, knowing that sort of information going in, I mean, it helps you make better decisions.
Right.
I think. I mean, knowledge is power, and you really need to know, in my opinion. I'm a big fan of genetic testing. The genetic testing companies out there would love me right about now because they're like, yes, go TJ, go. But I just think it was the best money that we've spent on, you know, assuring us that everything was okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, and also the fact that, I mean, there are so many things that can go wrong anyway. Knowing that you're starting out with a good embryo gives you some peace of mind.
Right.
And knowing that we're going in this and I'm older trying to get pregnant, you know, we didn't have the time. You know, not only did we not want to have the emotional time toll of miscarriages, but we didn't have the time to waste on, you know, going through multiple cycles and having multiple miscarriages if we actually wanted to have a child.
Right. All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up a little bit there talking about that. And then we're actually going to talk about the male's role in this. We're going to talk a little bit about the sperm. So catch us on the backside of this announcement. And you're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, we are talking today about fertility and infertility. And we've spent a big chunk of this show talking about egg quality and things that can affect it. My chair just dropped about an inch and a half. It threw me all off. I'm not really sure what happened. I got all dizzy and woozy. I wasn't ready for that. Oh, gosh. Huh. And here I laughed at Aaron for missing a word here a week or so ago, and I dang near fell out of my chair. I can't even sit properly. So anyway, we were before that mishap, we were talking about how, you know, we talked about getting a diagnosis of age-related infertility and all this stuff. And, you know, thyroid function makes a big difference here, and all these, you know, chromosomal abnormalities and the health of the egg really matters in making sure that you decrease your risk for having abnormal chromosomes.
Right. Well, chromosomal abnormalities almost always originate in the egg.
Yes.
And they become more frequent with age. We know that.
That's exactly right. And that's a big reason for early pregnancy miscarriage is about half of them are due to those abnormalities
right.
that take place.
And I think what's important is that the chromosomal abnormalities, from what research shows us, almost always occur during the last phase of the egg maturation.
Right.
Did I say maturation?
You did maturation. Say maturation.
All right. So, I mean, there's a lot that you can do, I mean, before you get to that point
right.
to affect egg quality.
Right. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, the egg's ability to generate its own mitochondria, which helps it produce energy. These little boogers have to create massive amounts of energy to split these cells and have all this stuff take place. It's actually pretty amazing. But before the break, we said that we were going to come back and we were going to talk a little bit about the male's involvement in this and talk a little bit about sperm. Now, granted, a lot of this is about egg quality, but many of the same types of external factors can impact sperm very similarly. You know, sperm quality is not as critical as egg quality, but it can have a significant effect on your likelihood of conceiving. And, you know, we used to think that a guy could, you know, father children, you know, much older than women can carry a child.
Well, and they still can, right?
Yeah, that's still true to an extent, but guys who have poor sperm quality can have issues too. I mean, you know, half of the chromosome comes from the guy.
Right.
So.
Right. I mean, you still have a much larger window than women do.
Right.
But it does, you know, it does make a difference. And we are also seeing a rise in you know, infertility due to, you know, a male factor. So it is becoming, and I mean, there are a lot of potential, you know, reasons for that. We've talked about toxins. There are so many of our household products. Our food supply is different. I mean, it's the same things that are affecting women are affecting men too. So right. It makes sense that there would be
nutritional
issues.
Status.
Right. I mean, we possible see, issues on both sides.
I one of the things that we do a lot of in the office, and we'll do a show one of these days on it because we keep getting asked to do this one as well, is, you know, watching this decrease in testosterone levels in males in general.
And we see tons of that.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we've got guys. We had a gentleman the other day in his mid-30s with his testosterone level was in the 200s. Now, that's extremely low for a 30-year-old male, 30-ish-year-old male. I mean, that's just awful. So, you know, we're definitely doing some work with that, but that's something that we see a lot of. And, I mean, that's an important piece of this puzzle is making sure that the guys are healthy too. And, you know, there are factors that go into that. So we've got a few minutes left. Let's just talk a little bit about some general information regarding fertility treatments that are out there. And then next week we'll really get into more meat and potatoes of what people can actually do to help their situations. So in 2015, so that's the most recent IVF data that we can really get our hands on to and talk about. The IVF success rate was 41%. Now, that's an overall total success. Now, if we're talking about a fresh transfer, now fresh transfers are when they do the IVF, they fertilize the egg, they get it to day five, and then they don't freeze it, they just transfer the little blastocyst fresh. If you're less than 35 years old, there is a 47.5% success rate with an average of 1.7 embryos transferred. That means that for the most part, if you've got two, they're transferring two. If you only have one, they'll transfer one. That's how it ends up being. But a lot of times, if you're less than 35, they transfer two. For people who are 35 to 37, that 47% success rate drops to 39.6% with an average of two embryos transferred. When you go from 35 to 37, if you jump to the next age category of 38 to 40, you're dropping your success rate down to 28% with an average of 2.2 embryos transferred. So we're transferring more embryos and we're losing success.
Let me just jump in really quick.
Yes.
Because I want to say, since you're in that category and I happen to fall in that category. So you said 38 to 40 years old, 28% success rate with 2.2 embryos transferred. I was 38 when we transferred the embryo. We transferred one and it worked. I mean, granted, everyone is different, but I just want to point out, like, this works. And I had three autoimmune conditions, and it worked the first time.
Correct. Dun, dun, dun. So, yeah, that's exactly it. Once you hit to 41, 42 years, the success rate of 2.6 embryos being transferred drops to 15.7%, so less than 20%. And 90% of IUIs or intrauterine inseminations fail. So the question becomes, why are failure rates so high? I mean, the most successful is less than 50%, and that's for people less than 35 years old. The overall average is 41%, right? It's just, it's sad. So why is it the rate so high? In general, it's the same thing that's plaguing every other condition in America. We are sick as a country. We are just not healthy. We're overfed, we're undernourished, and we're extremely nutrient deficient. That's what it is. That's really and truly what it boils down to, is that we just don't have the nutrient status that we should have in this country. We just, I mean, we eat horrible food. We don't take care of ourselves.
Well, our food supply is different, and we're not, then because of that, we're not getting enough nutrients. We're getting things in our food, you know, we're getting chemicals and things in our food that we shouldn't be.
Right.
And we're also exposed to a number of different toxins in our everyday life.
Thousands.
And that was one thing that was really shocking when I started looking into this, because I, you know, I knew diet was important, but the toxins that we're exposed to every day was something that I knew about, and we've done shows about. Actually, I think we did a show on it shortly after we had done all of this research, and I said, we've got to get this out. I had no idea that this was such a big deal.
Right.
But, you know, I didn't before doing this research. I knew I was aware of it, but not nearly, you know, as I didn't know it was nearly as big of a deal as what it is.
Right. Exactly. So, all right, that's about all the time we've got for today. Next week when we come in and talk about this, we're going to – I think it'll be part four next week. it's crazy. We're going to – one of the things that we're going to get into is we're going to talk about some chromosomal errors and what they are. We're going to talk about toxins and infertility. And if we get to it, hopefully, we will talk about we're going to talk about some diet things and some nutritional supplements to go along with it. So if you need more information, go to our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Give us a call, 314-293-8123. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram. We're out there. We'd love to hear from you. Email us. However you want to get in contact with us, we'll get back to you as quick as we can. For Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.